Good afternoon. We will be starting in a few minutes, but in the meantime, I am going to make an announcement with regards to the Internet Town Hall, which will take place this evening at 6 o'clock. And that's actually taking place in, we've on the Skype chat, we have a link. I'm not sure whether, is there a link on the chat on the AC room as well, or we could do that. It will give you the location of the town hall, which is at CBS Interactive Studios, a few blocks down from here. Many people will be meeting at about 6. It starts at 6, but we're meeting at what time downstairs? 5:30 between 5:30 and 5:45, I'm told, meeting in front of the hotel. Some people will be sharing cabs. Some people will want to walk a little bit. We've been in this room for the whole day, so maybe we want to walk a little bit. And the panel discussion will start at 6:30 and go on until 8 p.m. And I think Whit, who is with us, will be on the panel, will you?
I told them I would.
I told them I would. Okay, well.
I got to give up a cocktail party down at Stanford. That doesn't go down well.
Serious question. Do you know anything about parking down there?
I know less than you do because you live in this state. I don't even live here. So sorry. Now, if you want to participate, if you want to go there, it is important to register on the webpage, which is thepublicvoice.org/townhall2011. Just trying to fill in until more people come into the room, but I think that we'll be moving soon.
And just to as an update, at 6 o'clock, that's the reception for 30 minutes. So that's going to, I believe, be Greek food. And then at 6:30, the actual town hall begins. So if you want to have a nice walk and have a good little snack, please show up by 6 o'clock.
And I forgot to say that the title of the event is Emerging Issues for the Online Community. So quite a few issues. Anyway, I think we should start. Good afternoon. This is the ALAC meeting with the ESSAC on Tuesday, the 15th of March, 2011. It is 15:37 local time. We are 7 minutes behind, which is pretty good for us. With us, we have James Galvin and Patrick Feldstrom, who are going to be able to speak to us about the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, activities, outreach, and collaboration. So, Patrick or Jim, who's... Okay, Patrick.
Thank you very much. So, Patrick Feldstrom, my name. I'm newly appointed chair of ESSAC. Next slide, please. And with my in my room, with me in this room, I also have. Oh boy, that was close. So with me in the room here, I have Jim Galvin, the vice chair, and also a number of other ESSAC members. Can you please stand up so people see who you are?
That's quite a few. Right?
Yes. So, thank you very much. So, when we later go into a question and answer part of, and we talk about the various documents and activities that we have, in that case, we have a lot of people in the room here that can actually help you with more detailed questions on the various work parties. One of the good things with being appointed as a chair, you don't need to know anything about what people are doing. you just try to make sure they're doing their job. Anyways. So what I will talk about a little bit is the work plan for 2011, how we are doing our collaboration and outreach, for example, by being here. And after that, we can have some question and discussions. Next slide, please. So what we do in ESSAC is that we are working on various issues, and some of them are internal to ESSAC, and some of them are also external, which often result in documents that are published. So we look at here's an example of the various activities that we have for the calendar year 2011. We are looking at we have first of all four different work parties that you see: ready to transition, source address validation, zone risk analysis, orphan DNS records. And those are examples of the various activities that we have that are trying to look at various kind of issues, and we can go back to these afterwards if we have time, if people are interested with input directly from the ESSAC members that actually deal with these things. And then we have here example of three different processes that we are running internally to ESSAC. We have a membership recruitment process where we look at the moment on the actual process for recruitment, evaluation of whether we have the skills needed in ESSAC, etc. So we're trying to make that better, to make sure that we have all the skills that are needed to produce high-quality reports. The next, for me, quite important bullet has to do with, as a chair, of course, this is sort of my responsibility to ensure it really gets done. That is to make sure that we all the time are trying to improve what we're doing, how we are working, and specifically for us as an advisory committee, it is important not only to produce high quality documents, which we think we have been pretty good at doing. It's also the case that the document's quality must be measured in whether the content of the document is valuable for the receiving party, for example, you. So if it is the case that you, for example, work on something that is related to, it could be WHOIS, could be the register transfer issues and whatever. If it is the case that there are some technical issues that we also are then evaluating, it's very important that the report we are writing is something that you can use in your work. And that is something that maybe, when I came in and looked at it, something that we can improve. The last thing we're doing is that we are reviewing how we are doing the outreach and collaboration. So far, we have concentrated on meeting like this at the ICANN meetings. We have also meetings at the IETF meetings to meet explicitly with the technical community. And then we sort of go home and write our documents. What we have seen lately when the sort of turnaround inside ICANN and things get specifically closer to the launch of the GTLD process, we've seen that sometimes various groups inside ICANN would like to get responses faster from us, and maybe just responses to single questions. So we have tried once this week to get a written question, and we try to respond sort of within 2 or 3 days. That's what we see as possible, to respond to that question. Of course, the response is sort of kind of fluffy, but it could be evaluated whether it is a work item that we should take on as a task. As I said, we've only done it now once, and I'm not going to take on any more such direct liaisons with questions and responses until I know that this was actually usable for both parties that were involved in this exchange. So we'll see how it goes. But we are looking at how to improve the collaboration between ESSAC and other stakeholders. The last part of the collaboration, of course, has to do with all of you being active in some of the SOs, communicating with us as a supporting organization. And from my perspective, it's really important that collaboration is also an individual basis. And that is one of the reasons why I reached out to my ESSAC members and asked as many of them to come, given that their schedule permitted, because I don't want myself or staff to be a bottleneck here. It could sometimes, when you have a question which has a technical nature, maybe it's enough for you just to talk with one of the individuals in ESSAC. It will not be sort of a formal ESSAC response, but you can talk with the person that in its personal capacity give you sort of an evaluation and suggestions on what to do. And that could actually be pretty high value for you, because the individual, first of all, is a member of ESSAC just because of his personal sort of experience and what they're working with, the skill set or whatever. But secondly, the person, of course, is also part of all the discussion in ESSAC and know exactly what we're working with, know exactly where the sensitive issues, etc., and can flag for you if it is the case that you happen to walk into a minefield, or whether it is the case that you believe that you're walking in a minefield, but it's actually the beach or Half Moon Bay, and you can just go on. Yeah. So three layers of sort of collaboration, as I said. The formal documents that we are still producing, we are trying to see whether we are going to, whether we are able to do very quick sort of question response issues. And then, very important for me, also the informal communication. But still, that works to have multiple layers of communication as long as the parties that communicate do understand which one of those three communication channels are in use. And if I, as a chair, and Olivier, and I, we know each other so well, so if one of us detects the slightest confusion on which one of the channels that is going on, we will pull the handbrake immediately and try to sort out that issue. So, but as long as it works, just move on. Next slide, please. If we look at some examples of publications that we have published, I think... The two most interesting ones is potentially number 44 and 40, which are sort of guidelines are related to domain name registrations. If we take 44, for example, it is a guideline with lots and lots of questions and proposed answers that a registrant should ask before choosing a registrar. Of course, a registrant is, of course, not looking at any of those lists if it's not the case that they burnt their fingers at least twice, just like taking a backup, that people don't take a backup and before they lost their hard drive twice. No, the first time you lose your hard drive and you read back the backup and think, oh, it just happened, like it will never happen again. Then when it happened a second time, oops, this obviously is something that happens now and then. So it's sort of the same kind of thing here with the registrant guide. So one of the things that we are trying to do as well in ESSAC, apart from publishing the documents, is that we are looking into now as well, how can we make the documents we have written more known, so people not only read them, when they have some problems, they look for the document, read them, and then understand what the problem was. We really want to reach the stage that people read the documents, follow some advice, and avoid the problems. But of course, moving to that creates, we need like quite a lot of like marketing budget there to be able to handle. But anyways, that's the goal. Next slide, please. It is also the case that we are participating in working groups, and you're of course well known to these working groups are not a surprise to you, but we are trying to have participants in all the working groups that go on. So we always have a person that is there. Luckily, and this is also one of the reasons why we are looking at the skill set all over ESSAC. So regardless of what topic a working group is, we should have an individual inside ESSAC that know the technical portion of that. That is our goal. So far it has worked well. And that person or those persons that are in the working group, apart from, of course, having the technical skill set to be able to help directly with information and help the work of the working group, it is also the case that that person, from my perspective, also act as a liaison, as a messenger back. So if you have an ESSAC person part of the working group, please talk to that person and we work out how the communication channels, how we should work together, if it is the case that you need more help than what is available. So that was everything I was thinking of. Next slide, please. Everything I wanted to bring up. I would like to just check whether... Jim, do you want to say anything, or should we just...
No,
okay. So with that, that's my short sort of introduction of what ESSAC is for those who are new. Hopefully those that have been at ICANN for a while, hopefully you got some kind of view over what we are trying to work on at the moment regarding both what we're doing and how and regarding documents and issues, but also our internal process, what we're working with. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Patrick. And now the floor is open for questions.
And I have many, many ESSAC members with me, so please ask anything you want. Maybe you can actually, is it possible to go back to slide 3, ESSAC 2011 work plan? Thank you very much. So we can start with this, for example, then, and see whether there are specific questions on these issues.
No, we actually we accept questions both from the table and also from whoever is behind me.
Okay.
Evan. Evan Leibovich. Phew.
Oh, you thought you were going to get away with this?
No, I was actually going to turn it around and see whether ESSAC members have questions to you.
It's as well that I do this.
Exactly. The longer you talk, the fewer questions you will get.
Oh, well then, this may be brief, but the answer may be longer. At least within the North American region, we had an extended discussion about the politically motivated internet shutdown in Egypt and whether or not we should be taking a stance on it. And it was brought up within our group that this was very much a stability and security issue, and there was a question whether or not this is totally out of ICANN's scope or there is anything within this that we can help address. And if you want to say this is totally out of scope, that's fine, but the issue did come up within our region, and I feel obliged at least to ask.
Yeah, that's actually a very good question. Thank you. First of all, when we do our work in ESSAC, there are two things that we are absolutely trying to avoid. The first one is to write anything that is something that actually is a policy decision, which is sort of work that other people do. We do the technical background so the policy decisions has a foundation that they can lean against when they sort of draw their conclusions. The other thing that we are trying to do is to always only talk about the general cases, not specific sort of events. Although, of course, the reason why we have written some of our reports, and also we also in our reports sometimes refer to various incidents or other things we hear about, many things and the prioritization we do is based on real world events. So, regarding what has happened in Egypt and other cases, this is actually something that we are discussing at the moment, whether it is something that is an issue for ESSAC. And at the moment, I feel that it leans towards, but we have not made up a decision yet, that there actually is a work item for ESSAC to describe the implications of having domain names blocked. And as you know, blocking might happen in multiple ways, in multiple places in the network, etc. So one of the things we are talking about is whether that kind of description of the blocking phenomena itself, what that is, if that is something we should write about.
Thank you, Patrick. Next question. I'm not sure who put his hand up first. I'll start with Edmund first. Edmund Chung.
Thank you, Edmund here. I actually have a couple of questions, but what Evan mentioned brought up another question, which is, based on your... In terms of block names, wondering if that also relates and perhaps how it relates to DNSSEC as well. And then a couple of questions on source address validation, not quite sure what that is, and orphan DNS records, that might be of interest to others on what exactly those are.
Yeah, one, let me answer first the little bit more on the blocking issues, and then I ask. See, Merrick is here, and is Dave? Oh, Dave as well. Yeah, okay.
You.
Yeah, you're here. Okay. And then we have the actual work party members that can talk about the other two. Yes, that is exactly one of the things that maybe it is something that we should write about in about blocking. For example, given that you have DNSSEC, what is the actual implication? And it sort of also fits together to many of the other kind of things, because when you block, you might have secondary effects. There might be different things that happens depending on whether you block things close to the authoritative server or closer to the edge. But as I said, we are at the moment discussing whether it's something we should pick up. But I see that there might be something in there. So let's take them in order. You're sitting here, so let's start with...
Okay, if you want. I'll say a few words about...
James, sorry, you have to introduce yourself for the transcript and the translations and interpretation in other languages, please.
You'd think I would know this by now, but thank you, Olivier. I am Jim Galvin, and in this particular role in responding here, I'm chair of the work party that's looking at orphan DNS records. So for those who've been tracking carefully... The draft applicant guidebook, there are some words in there about orphan DNS records, as well as there is a topic about high security TLD zones, and there are some directions and actions in there with respect to orphan DNS records. This particular work party was motivated in part by the fact that some of those activities were in place, and also the fact that there are often assertions, or there have been some assertions, that orphan records in the DNS are used for abusive activities, that people take advantage of them. Now, just to clearly define what an orphan DNS record is, it is a record, usually at the TLD level, that has been left there, and it does not have a parent domain that is defined. Okay, so normally, when you are looking for a website or a website in a particular domain, you will query the TLD, and you'll be asking the TLD for where to find the information about that domain. And the TLD will have those name server records to point you at those things. Those records are called glue records, and those records can become orphaned if their parent domain is removed from the TLD. It turns out that what we're doing in this particular group, and we are nearing completion at this point, is to simply speak to defining what orphan glue is and the various circumstances that allow orphaned records to come into existence. There are actually some valid reasons why orphaned records might come into existence. The most notable one is that registries will, from time to time, they can, some registries, when they put a domain on hold, that causes the domain to be removed from the zone, but it does not remove it from the registry. So the name exists, but it has no role in the internet. If that particular domain had any glue records associated with it in some registries, they might be left behind, and so they become orphaned. So that's an example of a valid reason why an orphan record might exist. Another reason why, .museum is the canonical example for this. .museum as a TLD actually allows you to register and put into the TLD zone third-level names. Okay, so there's another reason why they might validly exist in a given TLD. It's just part of their operation and their definition. So what we're doing in this particular working group is creating a document where we're going to describe all of these things and make some recommendations about what the issues that registries should think about as they develop their own orphan record policies. and sort of encourage people to actually think about the issues and consider having an actual policy for what they might do. And we expect that this will inform, in particular, the high security zone discussions, in part because we will create a definition of orphan records, which we are hopeful that they will incorporate and use in their work. So before we move on, I want to ask if anyone has any other questions about orphan records. Be happy to answer them.
Edmund.
Yeah. This is Edmund again. I guess the reason why I brought it up, actually the reason why I brought up the few items just on the blocking first, I guess, is that I think once we, you know, the reason why I brought it up is because I think there are implications for ALAC, and even once the SSAC report comes out, maybe we should consider building on top of it and talk about, because on the blocking issue, definitely there might be items that we are most concerned about, which we can build on and put our statement in as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be a particular public comment period, but we might want to build on what they do. And on the orphaned DNS records part, perhaps if Jim, you can add a little bit more on, you know, the user point of view. The reason why I brought it up is because there are possibilities where, from what I understand, there are possibilities where this could cause situations for a user where they are directed to a different resource or a different resource that they were not intending for, and that does create a user implication. So that's the reason why I brought it up, because the ALAC would probably be more interested in that aspect of the orphaned names.
So again, one of the motivations for ESSEC looking at this issue was the fact that there had been some assertions in the community at large that orphaned records, orphaned GLUE records in particular, could be used in a bad way. So bad actors could take advantage of those records. If they could get access to the IP address, they could actually put up servers at that IP address and then take advantage of the fact that those name servers are defined, the name is defined, has an IP address, and use that name server and take advantage of that. We actually did do some statistical studies of some GTLDs and some other TLDs that were willing to offer some data to Steve Shang from ICANN. He's one of the support staff that actually supported this activity for us in the ESSAC. And we were not able to find any significant statistics that suggest that these records are used for bad reasons. So it becomes another one of those things where there are probably a few stories where this has been done. I mean, it has happened, but at least we have not been able to find any evidence that it's a significant issue and a real problem. So to that extent, a user really should never see any of this. I mean, unless they happen to go to a domain which they would have been led to by some other activity, some other action that was taking advantage of the existence of this record, this would never be visible to a user, and it would have no adverse effect on anything that a user was doing.
Thank you. The next question is from Tijani.
Merci.
Tijani will be speaking French, so yeah.
Please put your headphones. This is not a question, but rather a comment. Thank you, note that I would like to extend to all of you for your answer to Evans when you said that no consideration of a political nature should intervene in your work. Internet and ICANN, it's like water. Everybody should have access to it, good and bad ones. And political consideration should not be any of ICANN concern. And if that's the most important characteristic of this international organization. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tijani. And now we're going to go to another speaker. Could you please introduce them, Patrick?
Yes, Patrick Feltzer, my name. I would like to introduce Merike Keo, that is...
Yeah,
Yes, hi. Medica Keo, member of ESSAC, and I'm leading the working group on source address validation. And this particular working group...
Sorry, it's not working at the moment. The microphone is there. Okay, it's on now. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, starting again.
Okay. I think it's not loud enough. I don't... Okay. Okay, I'm not used to the performance aspect, but... Okay, my name is Medica Keo, and I am leading the working party on source address validation with an ESSAC. This work was motivated by conversations that came about from our group, where the understanding is there's still a lot of spoof traffic used for malicious behavior. And what is meant by spoofing is that traffic, as we're reading websites and as we're sending email, there's a source and destination IP address. And the source addresses are very often spoofed for malicious traffic, which means that they're IP addresses that don't belong to the people that are actually using them. And so this particular working group is looking at the techniques that have been developed over the last 10 years that are not really widely used, and also looking at new developments of techniques to be able to validate source addresses. And we're trying to determine, you know, whether or not it makes sense for people to, to raise the awareness, for one thing, that these techniques exist and why they would be useful in terms of stopping any kind of malicious activity. And the hope is to have some kind of resolution and recommendations for the community at large.
Thank you. Any comments? From the floor, or yes, Edmund.
Seems like it's always me. It's Edmund again. Thank you for that clarification. And in fact, that's exactly the reason why I brought it up. I think it has some implications to what we do, especially in terms of outreach, building on the work there. We could probably utilize that, you know, to reach out to our communities as well. I don't know how we're doing on time and whether other people want to ask questions. I know I'm hogging the mic right now, but I have another question.
Thank you, Edmund. We'll ask if anyone else has questions or an answer, perhaps. Oh, well, I need to have 360-degree vision, and, of course, I'm not qualified enough yet, but soon.
Hi, I'm Dave Piscatella. I'm Dave Piscatella from ICANN, and it occurs to me that a really interesting exercise that ALAC is possibly best positioned to engage in is helping gather information about spoofed IP addresses. There is a project called the Spoofer Project, and if you Google or search Spoofer Project, you'll find the page. And what you can do is you can download a very, very small piece of software that will allow you to test whether or not your computer and your network can be used to spoof IP addresses. The value of you going through this exercise is that you allow the folks at MIT to understand what networks are not doing source address validation. And this gives us a much, much broader picture of where the pain points are in the Internet. And because you have so many regional organizations and you can reach so many more thousands of people than probably MIT can, I think this would be a tremendous service to the Internet community if you could engage in some awareness and say, you know, encourage your constituencies and members to all try this. Yeah, Julie has the link and she'll send it to Heidi and Heidi can put it right up on the wiki.
Fantastic. That sounds like an excellent program. I was going to ask the killer question. Is it both for IPv4 and for IPv6? I'm not sure whether that was recorded. The answer is yes. Fantastic. Super. Okay. Any more comments and questions? Well, it looks like we're going back to our resident expert, Edmund Chung.
Thank you. This is Edmund again. So my next question is my favorite topic, IDNs. So we heard earlier this morning that the ESSAC will be looking at IDNs, I guess, again, especially on the IDN variants. So I wonder, because I don't see it here, I wonder if that work has begun, or you know, where it's headed or direction. Because the reason why I ask is because there are currently a number of groups working on it, and what is the thinking in terms of the coordination and all that.
So to be able, Patrick Feldstrom again, chair of ESSAC, to be able to answer that question, of course, I have the work party, the person responsible for the work party, Sarmad, here in the audience.
Hello, this is Sarmad Hussain. So this is a very recent activity which has been started within ESSAC. In fact, we've just formulated the work party, and we still have to have our first scoping meeting, which is going to be held after the current ICANN meeting. We are participating in the other activities which are going on around IDNs. So we are very aware of what's going on within the joint IDN working group with the CCNSO and GNSO. We are also engaged with the recent project which is being launched by ICANN staff on IDN variant issues. It's got a very nice acronym. It's called the IDN VIP project. VIP. So we are already talking to the relevant people. There is a, and once we, but we will have more concrete things to say about the work which we are going to take up after our first meeting, which is going to be probably in 2 weeks' time from now. So we can come back to you with more details at that time.
Thank you very much, Sarmad. Any more comments and questions? And well, Patrick Feldstrom, who's sitting next to me, has started running that program to check on the spoofing. And I wonder where the results are for our network here.
So I think we could just give back 15 minutes to you.
I have a very happy Patrick Feldstrom next to me who thinks he can take a break. Okay, well, I think no more questions. So thank you very much, Patrick. Thank you very much, James. And thanks to the rest of the crew who has all come here. We really appreciate that you've come here en masse. And I'm sure that we'll be at some point continuing this dialogue and look forward to it. Thank you.
I know, but I want to walk. I'm just stuck.